So before we get into the program, I'd like to begin with a few words from the book, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto by Mitch Albom. Don't know if you've seen it or read it. Frankie is a mythical character who's the greatest guitarist to walk the earth. The Voice of Music narrates the tale of Frankie, and I'd like to share a few lines from the book. If I lose it or choke up, please forgive me. Sometimes I don't make it through this. I am music. I am alone, not a possession. You give me back upon departure. There's a reason you glance up when you hear a melody or tap your feet to the sound of a drum. All humans are musical. Why else would the Lord give you a beating heart? Of course, some of you get more of me than others. Parenthetically, some of you get more of music than me. I live inside your every hum and whistle, every pluck of a string, every plink of a piano key. I cannot keep you alive. I lack such power. But I infuse you. And then it goes on later to say, everyone joins a band in this life. You are born into your first one. Your mother plays the lead. She shares the stage with your father or siblings. As life goes on, you will join other bands, some through friendship, some through romance, some through neighborhoods, school, and army. Maybe you'll all dress the same or laugh at your own private vocabulary. Maybe you will flop on couches backstage or share a boardroom table or crowd around a galley inside a ship. But in each band you join, you will play a distinct part, and it will affect you as much as you affect it. So welcome to our band, the Far West Band. There are a few things before we turn the program over to the Best of the West ceremony. First, I want to quickly introduce Jeanette Lundgren, my conference co-coordinator and vice president, to say hello.
Hi. Are we having a great conference? I just wanted to say hi and be up here so I could see you all. I'll have a lot more to tell you tomorrow morning at breakfast, so I hope you can be there. In the meantime, please enjoy your luncheon and the rest of the conference, and I'll see you tomorrow. It's going to be a great time.
Lots more to go. Okay, before we turn the program over, I want to recognize the passing of Lewis Myers, former executive director of Folk Alliance. And I'd like to ask Jared Rivers, who's the Folk Alliance membership manager, to come up and say a few words about Lewis and bring a welcome from Folk Alliance.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it. To those of you who didn't know who Lewis Myers was, he's our recent just passed executive director of Folk Alliance. He was the executive director of Folk Alliance International for the last 10 years. Just recently stepped down, and Angus Finnan is now the new executive director. And I just wanted to give you guys, I know probably most of you in this room knew Lewis for even longer than I did. And I'm going to try real hard not to cry in front of 250 people right now. Because in 2013, he came into my life, and I had no idea who he was and what Folk Alliance International was. And, well, it changed completely after meeting that man. And I say that I graciously got to work with him every single day for almost 3 years. We sat across the desk from each other, and not only was he a mentor to me, but the man changed my perspective on music and introduced me to a music industry and a family of 3,000 folk musicians and presenters and music industry people across this world that completely changed my life. And I know that there are those of you sitting in this audience that would not even be here if it wasn't for him. And in March of this year, we lost him completely unexpectedly. Nobody got to say goodbye. And he was in the best health of his life at that point. And so, completely unexpectedly, we were all still trying to deal with it. You know, the one thing that I think that he left me with more than anything was the importance of the artists in this room. And as much as those of us planning these conferences try to, you know, court the best presenters and work with the best industry representatives and have the best meals for you guys, none of it matters if we're not taking care of the artists. And I watched him bend over backwards a million times for artists in his life, and that's the thing that I learned. I want to make sure to always be listening to what the artists have to say. And this year, Folk Alliance International in February, the conference is titled Forbidden Folk. Stop by and grab a conference flyer from me in the networking center. I hope you guys get a chance to come this year to see what artists are doing. I mean, I think the title speaks for itself, Activism in Art. And we're celebrating artists this year, and we're remembering Lewis in all of it. Thank you guys very much. Come see me at the networking center.
So my part is over for this afternoon. I'm going to turn it over to the guy who towers over me in the Best of the West ceremony. We kiddingly say, stand up, Mark, and then Steve comes up, and he's standing up. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve Brogdon, who is the past Far West president and the Best of the West program master of ceremonies and the person who has helped to orchestrate all that. Steve, take it away.
Thank you, Mark. Can you all hear me? Okay, first, I think Mark and Jeanette deserve a round of applause. They would be the first to tell you that putting this thing on is a team effort, and it certainly is, without question. But every team needs a leader, and those two have been terrific. So I thank you both for all your hard work. I'm just curious, and I've done this before, how many people are here for the first time? All right. And how many are here from east of the Mississippi? All right, let's go. Okay, that's great. Is there anybody here from out of the country, not including Canada? Okay, and where are we from? I'm sorry? France. Oh, we have people from France. How wonderful is that? And Denmark. How cool is that? Okay, how many from Canada? All right. Welcome, everybody. We're delighted you're here. Okay, when we were planning the conference, we were delighted to see that this conference coincided with the 50th anniversary of the Seattle Folklore Society. And let's give them a hand for that, please. And that's certainly a milestone that deserves to be recognized. So this year, the Seattle Folklore Society receives an Organizational Achievement Award in recognition of their 50 years of service to the Seattle area. It was founded in 1966. They have one of the largest and most stable memberships in the country. They produce concerts, dances, song circles, and a variety of other folk-related events. And to present the award to the Folk Society, I'd like to add, we have representatives from the Folk Society here. I'd like them to join us, and Chris Lund will come up and make a presentation to them. So, gentlemen and ladies, please join us.
Hi, what a pleasure. John Ullman and I are 100 years old. And we both started a midlife crisis in the 1960s. He was having to drive with his friends to Portland because there was no place to have bluegrass and blues and all those wonderful things going on. And so they got tired of driving to Portland, he said. And so he got together with a dinner one night, and they decided they'd have 20 of them, and they'd all put $20 in, and they'd put their own concert on. And that was the start. So they, in 1966, they formed the Seattle Folklore Society, and on November 15th, presented blues players Mississippi Fred McDowell, Mance Lipscomb, booking them through R. Hooley. I was in an alternate universe in Palo Alto, California, and I got to see Mance Lipscomb at the same time on his first R. Hooley LP release at a little theater in Palo Alto. We are about to get involved in an open mic. The Seattle Folklore Society was a much grander scale. They were putting on a concert. So Ullman, Nam Kung, and the Williams, they all got together, and that first concert was held at the University Friends Center in Seattle. The Seattle Times did a huge, big article on it. Admission, $1.50. They sold it out, great price, and had 200 more in line after the concert was sold out. The center, fortunately, had another room, and so they moved all those people into that other room, and they did the two artists did the concert there and went over and did the other concert, so it worked out. Then they hooked up with and presented the New Lost City Ramblers with Mike Seeger. And Mike Seeger became one of the greatest supporters of the Seattle Folklore Society, all the way from back east, but he was a guru for them. Bill Monroe came to town. Did you know that Phil and Vivian Williams were members of the Bluegrass Boys? On the way to Seattle, Bill Monroe's tour bus broke down. And so he phones up and says, I think I'll fly up with my guitarist, and Doug Green, and you fill in the rest of the band. So Phil and Vivian Williams and Paul Wiley became the Bluegrass Boys for that evening. Reverend Gary Davis did three concerts at the Seattle Folklore Society. In my alternate world down in Palo Alto, Reverend Gary Davis was playing at Stanford University Coffee House, and I was covering with a photographer at the time to write an article. And I was sitting probably the distance between one chair and another chair where Gary Davis, it was a really short stage. I was looking right into a burnt hole in his wonderful Gibson from his cigarette smoking. Marvelous little show. Then Seattle Folklore Society brought in Lightnin' Hopkins. In my Bay Area alternative, Lightnin' Hopkins and Mose Allison were playing in San Francisco. Well, Mose Allison did a song that Hopkins had done for years. Hopkins jumped right up on the stage right after, and he played that same song. And, of course, the crowd went wild, and they all knew what was going on. And Mose Allison stomped out, never played the second set, just disappeared. So, but the Seattle Folklore Society story is much better. They always topped us. In your universe up here, the event got raided twice in the same night. First, on Mike Russo's opening set, four officers had been sent to shut the concert down. But the officer spotted Phil Williams and was a friend and supporter of Phil and Vivian Williams' bluegrass band. Well, they asked the officers, yeah, why are you here? The officer says, I don't know. So they left to find out. At 11 p.m. that night, the Seattle Cabaret Commissioner, I love that title, came to shut the concert down because it's not legal under the permit to have people dance. There was no dancing. And John Ullman told them to go upstairs and look, there's no dancing. The commissioner went up there and he looked, there's no dancing. Huh. But he said, but it says so in the newspaper, we're going to shut you down anyway. Then the manager of the hall, a large Scandinavian woman, put her arm around the shoulder of the balding, round cabaret commissioner and said, Orville, these are nice people. They're not fraternity kids throwing up all over the place. Let them finish their little show here. Well, okay, Matilda. And he returned to policing Seattle nightlife. Seattle Folklore Society brought in Joe Williams on his nine-string guitar, one of my favorite performers. Later came Jesse Fuller, the one-man band out of San Francisco, who, of course, we saw all over on San Francisco at festivals and on the streets. I arrived in late 1969 and started what became Victory Music in the late 69, So our worlds, our parallel universes started to merge a little bit here. Seattle Folklore Society booked Mike Russo, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, Georgia Sea Island Singers, John Lee Hooker, and Courtsy Victory Music did the same. The Ralph Stanley Show unfortunately lost a lot of money for him. So Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee did a benefit to get the whole thing back on good financial ground. And they were the first artists we booked. Sometimes we fall on our face, like the Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee sold out. We had less luck with the Georgia Sea Island Singers. We did very well with John Lee Hooker, superb. Seattle Folklore Society didn't have so much luck. That was the luck of the draw. You never knew what was going to work or why. Also around this time, the Seattle Folklore Society was publishing the Seattle Folklore Society Journal, SFS Journal. Again, a wonderful crosstalk between our organizations. Diane Auer, who was the editor, she and her husband, Diane Auer, came down to Courtsy, not just to play, but to encourage us and to try to help us, you know, get along, make contacts, and just move through the whole montage you have to do when you get started. And they did the same thing for the Olympia Folk Society. This journal archive is a wonderful information, history, and reflection of folk music for our local base and has universal appeal. There's also videos that were done by KCTS-TV and University of Washington Department of Ethnomusicology. And lots more spin off from Seattle Folklore Society. There was the wonderful folklore store on the university started by Thane Mitchell and later became an independent business. Phil and Vivian Williams started the Northwest Folklife Festival at Seattle Center. Williams told us about the start of the event in an article to Jennifer White. Among the decent-sized first-year crowd was Leo Barnish. He is of the National Festival Association from Washington, D.C. He asked Phil in 72, "How did you ever audition all these 300 performers and groups?" "We didn't audition any of them." And I love this line, "If you give a person an opportunity, they will do a good job." We tried to stay away from stars. No one was featured. Folk life is about what people do. Folk life was a chance to present a broad spectrum of things people could actually do themselves. This legacy continues now in the hands of an independent organization. But I know all the performers I was involved with down south in Tacoma, they were all traipsing up and playing at Folk Life, doing open mics up there. They were presenting. They were doing sea songs. They were at the dances everywhere. So it was a huge movement of all the performers in the area. And really, that is part of the legacy of Seattle Folklore Society, how many people they affect and move. Going back to that parallel universe, many musicians that were in Northern California migrated up here. People like Jim Page, Eric Escheman, Dave Lippman, Ed Littlefield. And across the bay, people we just kind of knew, the Gypsy Jiffle String Band and Sandy Bradley. They showed up at a Courtsy open mic. We got a couple jobs for them, and they kind of disappeared. What they were doing was getting in the same areas with Phil and Vivian Williams, and the whole contra dance and square dance and other kinds of dance scene began to develop. It became one of the largest in the entire country. It's an amazing feat. We're going to, some of the things that they happened is that if you could go to a dance in 1985, you could go dance every night between Bellingham and Olympia. That's how strong that particular community became, just because they supplied the impetus for people like Victory Music and others to do it. There are all sorts of spin-offs that continue all over Northwest from Bellingham to Olympia. If the Seattle Folklore Society, you create the conditions for folks to participate or present music, they will. Both Seattle Folklore Society and Victory Music, in various reincarnations we've all had, have gone through tough times financially and just having enough bodies to do the job. There's a great saga of the breakup and spinoff of Folk Life and the Seattle Folklore Society, known by insiders as the Great Computer Robbery. But that is an hour-long story, and I have only a few here. The organizations went through separate ways, but Seattle Folklore Society had to find a way to fill the financial void here. This might have sunk them if it weren't for a philanthropist named Ed Littlefield with a $50,000 grant from Seattle Folklore Society. Pretty amazing. He did a lot of other things, too. Again, in the parallel universe, Ed Littlefield and Jim Page, teenagers jamming in Palo Alto, California. And here we are in that parallel universe for a couple more contemporary shots today. In the current October 2016 issue, you see the concert the Seattle Folk Orchestra presented with Jeff Warner. Jeff and I did a whole bunch of things with the International Folk Alliance, serving on board, committees, and doing all kinds of things. And the next month, you're going to be presenting Heidi Miller, who served on our board, and Jim Page, who's been playing with us since he was a teenager in Palo Alto. Today, Seattle Folklore Society continues to present concerts, both national, world acts, and top regional acts. They have a monthly 16-page flyer with articles and an 80-event calendar, information on every diverse concert series, a monthly contra dance, song circles, supporting the entire folk and Americana community. They supply resources for dance, archival information, classes, workshops you can get involved in. They've been doing this for 50 years, and it's touched so many people, there's no way you could count them. For any organization to survive the trends, all the politics, the financials ups and downs, for a half century is simply amazing. You cannot count all those hundreds and thousands of hours or individuals that have made Seattle Folklore Society happen, but I'm sure the first 20 who chipped in $20 each to make it happen, John and Sally Ashford, Arnie and Judy Benedict, Chuck Burris, Davy Coffin, John Coombs, John Gallant, Charles Laird, Kitty Leaf, Rich Levine, Jack Levy, Barney Munger, the Nam Kungs, Irwin Nash, John Ullman, John Watt, Barb and Eric Eisman, Phil and Vivian Williams, and David Whitehorn. They made it happen. I'm sure they would say, here's the torch. Run with it on this second 50 years. Thanks, Seattle Folklore Society, for leading the way to a better community for all of us and for myself and everybody I ever heard saw. Thank you. Please come up and get your award. Woo! Woo! Woo!
Woo! Thank you very much. Woo!
Take her out of the box and show it on.
All right, I will do that. Thank you very much. My name is Sandy McDonald, and we are the concert committee, and we thought it was important for all of us on the concert committee to stand up and be introduced or share the spotlight here, although they elected me to speak, and if they will give me about a half a minute before I introduce them, I just want to let you know that I think back to, although I wasn't active at the time, John Ullman and all those folks paying their $20, so rather than going and seeing folks that were playing dances and ballroom events in Seattle, like the Kingsmen and the Sonics and Paul Revere and the Raiders, who I remember used to hearing about, or going to the Eagles Ballroom with the folks who would come up from Fillmore Auditorium down in San Francisco to perform. John Ullman's still the president, or once again is the president, I might say. And, you know, and that is both a blessing and a bit of a bane, because as we have noted, as we host and produce concerts, we have an aging audience. The audience are getting gray or losing hair like many of us. So it is a particular treat to note how many young performers we have here. And I've heard so much about the Wintergrass Academy and the work that Joe Siemens, Ben Hunter are doing to encourage young folks. I like to point out, as I did back when we celebrated our 40th anniversary, that we're still here, and the Seattle Supersonics are gone. We're still here in Parker's Ballroom up in North Seattle and Lake Hills Ballroom here on the east side, and the Eagles Auditorium where they had all those dances are gone. And politicians do serve their terms and leave, but the Seattle Folklore Society is here and is going to continue. So with that in mind, and to that, I want to particularly make note of, from down to the far end, Wes Waddell at the Venues Choice concert. He pointed out he was the young member of the audience back in about 15 years ago or longer when he used to serve coffee and bakery items at the Grateful Bed Bakery where we used to host concerts and squeeze about 70 people if we were lucky to be there. We did have an opportunity to hear Dave Carter in his early years by himself at one of those concerts. We have Marnie Rashmiel and Gene Geiger and Craig Lund, who were active participants, active producers in our of our concerts. We all share that volunteer responsibility. We couldn't get along without volunteers extraordinaire like John Hibbs here at this end. John is, we haven't yet encouraged him enough to produce a concert, but John is one of those volunteers who takes that extra step and helps us do a better job of producing concerts. And we have Susan Howell and myself, who have been, we were the co-chairs of the committee for, frankly, just long enough that we've now retired. And Valerie Cohen is one of the co-producer or co-director now of the chair of the committee. And without Nels is Susan's husband, and he's the fajita maker at the after-concert parties. He's the one who stays away from the concert committee meetings, which I bet is a pleasure to both him and Susan, so he doesn't have to listen to us when we have our monthly meetings. And he's also done sound for us, like so many. We rely on about 10 to 12 volunteer producers, another two dozen volunteer concert helpers every week. Chris has mentioned Jim Page coming to town next, or actually he's in town, but we're going to host a concert for him next month. And if you're going to stick around town tomorrow night, Jamie LaValle is going to be in concert over at the Finney Neighborhood Center. So, and Richard Gilman. He's right behind us, emeritus committee member. And boy, the one who really helped us turn into the modern age with the computers back when we got our website going and so forth and so on. Thank you so much for honoring us. We will honor you back and be back next year and 10 years down the road to tell you that we're celebrating our 60th anniversary, I am sure.
Okay, now we move on to the Best of the West presentations. I'd like to explain for a little bit the process we go through for this. You can find the criteria, by the way, on the website, Far West website, far-west.org. You'll find the criteria there. Every February, we send out a notice to the Far West membership calling for nominations. We receive those nominations, and then it's up to the board to decide who will be the eventual honoree. It usually takes at least 3 rounds of voting. Each round, usually, we don't say it's the top 3 or the top 5. There's usually just a natural break between the top group and the lower group. And so the top group then goes on to the next round of voting, and eventually we do get down to a final honoree. We do have 2 honorees in the audience. Right now, Russ and Julie Paris, they were our ambassadors last year. They're right there. And Chris mentioned several times Phil and Vivian Williams. They were our honorees a few years back. I don't remember the year. I want to say 2008 2011, but I'm not sure. And it's not cast in stone, but we try to honor people in the region in which they practice their craft. It just makes sense because that way more of their friends can join in the celebration that is being a Far West honoree. And also, it's been my practice, my personal practice, to not say it's a Best of the West winner, because winners imply losers, and there are no losers in this group, believe me. And that's just a personal thing of mine. With all this criteria in mind, it's with great pleasure that Far West recognizes as its ambassador this year, Peter McCracken. He's the program manager of Centrum, which is located in Port Townsend, Washington. And just a few sentences about Centrum. Their mission is to promote creative experiences that change lives. Centrum's vision is of a future where creative artists and learners of all ages and backgrounds connect through direct and shared artistic experiences. Now, I know Peter's name. I've been doing the Best of the West now for 7 years. Every year, Peter's name gets thrown into the hat. And this year, I had a hunch it would be his year because there was a record-breaking 3 nominations for him. And as the voting proceeded, it became pretty obvious that he would be the honoree. Now, one of the things that I'd been told before I talked to him is that he was a very humble man. Is very self-effacing, and I find that to be true, because when I called him on the phone to tell him about this, his immediate reaction was to list 5 names of people he thought were more qualified than he. But I said, look, it's a 2-month process, we're not doing it again, and you're our honoree. So deal with it. And again, so typical, if you were at the official showcases last night, Peter was up there. You didn't necessarily know he was there, but he was helping doing the stage manager thing, just, again, wanting to shine the light on the artists and not on himself. And just in walking around with him today, I've seen so many, and yesterday too, I've seen so many people come up to him and embrace him, and it's just so obvious that he's a very beloved man, and we are honored to be able to honor him. Now, one of the people who feel so strongly about Peter is Molly O'Brien. There she is. And did anybody see her showcase last night? Talk about a vocal powerhouse. She's recorded several albums, both with her brother and with Chris. On Sugar Hill. They're just a dynamic duo. And she has asked if she could present the Ambassador Award to Peter. So now, please help me welcome Grammy winner, Molly O'Brien.
I'd just like to correct for the record, my husband is Rich Moore right here, so it's okay. I'm very happy to be here nonetheless. It's great to be here. Well, we're honoring Centrum today, one of our country's most respected arts organizations, but we're also honoring Peter McCracken, one of Centrum's best, most revered, and brilliant administrators. Centrum was founded in 1973 at Fort Worden State Park in Port Townsend, Washington. It's a truly unique place where artists of every stripe come together to think, create, inspire, and teach. Year-round programming offers everything from music, dance, and writing to visual arts and theater, and are led by major artists from around the country and the world. Gatherings like the Port Townsend Writers Conference, the Chamber Music Series, Jazz Port Townsend, the Choro Workshop, the Ukulele Festival, Voice Works, Port Townsend Acoustic Blues Festival, and of course, the massive Festival of American Fiddle Tunes. Each of these programs draw thousands of people to the beautiful Fort Worden campus every year, making it a treasured center of creative learning and interaction. And about 27,000 people, this is amazing, 27,000 people yearly benefit from Centrum's programming. And amazingly, A third of those people are school-age kids. Centrum offers the chance. Centrum offers the chance to experience artistic and creative endeavors that are life-changing. I know because it changed mine. Late in 2004, I got a call from someone named Peter McCracken. He told me he was calling to see if I'd be interested in teaching at VoiceWorks, the first VoiceWorks workshop to be held at Centrum the following June. "It's going to be a full week of just singing," he said, "just singing. Not one of these things where there's a one-hour vocal class every day at just another class at a bluegrass or an old-time camp. This is just about singing, just singing. It's going to be great." I told him, "I've never taught at a workshop like this. I'm not really a voice teacher. I don't know how to begin to tell someone how to sing. I just sing. I don't know how I do it. I just do it." He said, "That's exactly why I want you." I thought to myself, who the hell is this guy? And then I immediately agreed to go to VoiceWorks. Peter accorded me the greatest respect as a singer and a musician. He trusted in me because he believed in me, and that even though I was just a singer, as some naive musicians speak of us, he believed that singing itself is an art form to be taken seriously. And he believed in me. Because of that, I believed in myself more and truly became a better singer. That first week at VoiceWorks was a revelation to everyone who was there. Peter's official Centrum bio says he's the program manager for FiddleTunes, VoiceWorks, and the UKFest. It says he came to Centrum in 1987 to take over the program manager's job for the Festival of American FiddleTunes. What it doesn't say is that he built FiddleTunes up into one of the most prestigious 24/7 week-long workshops in the world. He went directly to the source for his instructors, and he brought legendary cultural musical elders to Port Townsend. Many of these legends have since passed and are now succeeded by musicians who were not even born in 1987 when Peter came on board. But they're now well on their own way to becoming standard bearers for their own music. Peter's a folklorist who mines our world for musical wonders like Ferris and Jason Romero, Joelle Savoie, Rhiannon Giddens, and Ben Hunter and Joe Siemens, who are here this weekend at Far West. Young new masters recruited by Peter who show us how they've transformed and built upon their own cultures and music and brought it all to the 21st century. Since 1992, he's created the Blues Workshop and Festival, the Uke Festival, a folk dance festival, the Roots of Rock, Slide and Steel, Kitchen Culture, Voice Works, and more. This past July, on the stage of the 40th annual FiddleTunes concert, he was honored with the Centrum Champion Award, established in 2015 for recognition of outstanding leadership, volunteerism, contributions, or stewardship of Centrum programs and its mission. And then it was immediately announced that evening that a fund for Centrum in honor of Peter had been created, a gift to the tune of $500,000 provided by Ed and Laura Littlefield. Thank you, Ed and Laura. $500,000 in the form of a fund to be known as the Peter McCracken Heritage Fund hopes to raise matching funds with a goal of raising $1 million. The proceeds will support the presentation and preservation of traditional and folk music genres at Centrum. In short, it means that the future for traditional and folk music at Centrum will be secure for generations to come. Just think, $1 million for folk music. And all in Peter McCracken's name, yes. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere about the $1 million. What Peter's official bio doesn't say is that his genius lies in several facets. He's a brilliant programmer. He knows how to bring together a strong staff of people who are able to effectively communicate their own culture. These teachers may not be technically proficient in their field, but that's not what's important to Peter. What is important is that they treat their students as equal and that there are no egos involved on either side. Coming to Centrum to teach for Peter might mean you don't know another soul there, but somehow he creates chemistry among the staff that produces once-in-a-lifetime collaborations that are exciting for both the staff and the students. I can honestly say that there's not a faculty member that doesn't absolutely love McCracken. He's a brilliant planner. He gives everyone the space and time and the daily schedule so that there's breathing room and time for spontaneity. He's flexible. He's not a micromanager. The schedules aren't so fixed that you can't come up with a new class one morning for that same afternoon, maybe based on a song someone heard jam the night before. Serious. Or maybe there's a theme that's important for that day. It's okay, go ahead, have a class about that. He programs so that everyone, staff and students alike, can engage, jam, hang, and learn from each other at all hours of the day and night. The ebb and flow of the music is what's important. He has incredible instinct, and perhaps this is where his genius really reveals itself. By hiring young masters and aspiring young musicians and performers and treating them all with the greatest respect and interest in their art form, he has elevated our country's greatest regional music forms to a high art. He recognizes the importance of sharing cultures in a most authentic and natural way. And perhaps most importantly, at a time when most of us wonder how this music that we all so fervently love and believe in will ever continue, his instinctive and brilliant programming and thinking is doing cultural preservation its biggest favor. Through the programs at Centrum, he brings young people into the fold and helps them navigate the art forms we treasure and need into the future. We're now in the 21st century and well into our country's artistic adulthood. Federal arts programs are well established and are hopefully here to stay. State and local arts programs and festivals in all parts of the country continue to help artists think globally while acting locally. Our art forms and the lessons they teach are able to continue with organizations like Central and administrators like Peter McCracken. And with the passing of some of our greatest promoters and administrators of the arts, people like Joe Wilson, who's one of Peter's greatest mentors, we have strong comfort in knowing that Peter McCracken has ascended to the next rung of our cultural ladder. He's our new guide, our mentor, a visionary and an inspiration to all of us. He's all wrapped up into the form of an unassuming guy who's shy in the spotlight, a miraculously talented musician and educator who also happens to be one of our greatest arts administrators. He's someone who loves to laugh, play the fiddle, listen, and even volunteer at Far West. His infectious love and enthusiasm for our music and culture excites everyone around him. We're profoundly lucky to have him in our orbit and to be a part of his tribe. I'm proud to call him my friend and so honored to introduce him to you today. Please welcome Peter McCracken.
Sit down, y'all. Jesus, Molly. Well, you know, I get paid to do these things. You look at this conference or the Seattle Folklore Society, that's all volunteer. That's really, really powerful. Give yourselves a hand, huh? But I thank y'all for this. It does mean a lot to me because it's unbidden and from my peers. But I'll tell you a few things I've learned. The bigger the mistake, the longer the memory. And you can't squirt a little vinegar on a cucumber and call it a pickle. And the Joe Wilson that Molly mentioned, he did tell me what he wanted to put on my gravestone, which was, he should have been shot, but he was lucky. Anyway, I'll be presenting a little video footage of Howard Armstrong and Abner Jay this afternoon at a 2:30 workshop. If you're interested in that, come on by if it fits in your schedule and all. Thank you so much.
Can I take this? Thank you.